They Were Afraid, an Easter sermon preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin.
For to proclaim the resurrection of Jesus, an empty tomb, is not good news, not for sinners, apart from his death for sinners.
And we'll send you a CD of this sermon and an Ascension sermon for any size gift during the 50 days of Easter. Make a secure online donation today, issuesetc.org. Thanks for your support during the Easter season.
We have gathered in Tampa from many countries around the world. This is quite a moment in the story of United Methodism.
The overseas, chiefly the Africans, will become a majority of the denomination within 10 years or less, and with that, it's almost impossible for the liberal side of the church to prevail.
There comes a time when all of us are going to face some of the limitations that come with age, and we're a youth-obsessed society that really doesn't know how to deal, first of all, with death, and secondly, with aging in a graceful way.
I think it's great to expose our kids, to expose the church to that. And I think for far too long, the church has sort of stifled creativity.
I think Ed Young has a way of getting his point across without live animals as props, as entertainment.
Thank you for providing theology for clerical collar, white collar, and blue collar.
Well, I remember this had to be Sunday school or youth group, probably youth group. It was considered a good idea to go through the Gospel of Mark because the Gospel of Mark was said to be really accessible, very simple, reading kind of like a newspaper. Now, I don't know how much of that is necessarily true. The church is remembering the evangelist Mark, who may or may not appear in the Gospels. And we're going to be talking about him here for the better part of this first hour of Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. Dr. Jim Vels will be our guest for the first part of the program on this Wednesday afternoon, April the 25th. A little bit later, Deaconess Pam Nielsen will join us to teach a Sunday school lesson. We'll talk about Paul and Timothy and the Acts 15 Council of Jerusalem, where circumcision and Gentile believers are the real issue being dealt with. It actually sets the stage for a good portion of St. Paul's writings later in the New Testament. Dr. Craig Evans will join us in the last part of the program, part three of a five-part daily series with him on biblical archaeology today. Well, we've talked about Nazareth and the cities in Galilee where Jesus spent a majority of his northern Israel ministry. We talked a little bit yesterday about synagogues, the archaeological evidence for synagogues in the Holy Land prior to 70 AD, pretty well established. That brings us to reading, writing, and literature. There are skeptical scholars who will say Jesus couldn't read, and his disciples, well, if Jesus couldn't read, his disciples certainly couldn't. Is that true, and what sort of evidence do we have for literacy in the Roman Empire in first century Palestine there in the first century? Dr. Craig Evans will be our guest in about an hour here on Issues Etc. Dr. Jim Vels is our guest. He's professor of New Testament at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis, and he's author of the forthcoming Concordia Commentary on Mark. Dr. Vels, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's good to be here on this St. Mark's Day.
It's difficult to write a lengthy biography of the man, but what can we say with certainty about the evangelist Mark?
Well, not all that much, I guess. Let me just back you up a second here to say, you know, some people claim that the Gospels are anonymous and that we really don't have any definite authorship of any of them. Well, that's only in the most incredibly technical way true. For all practical purposes, it's not true. Every manuscript we have, let's just take the Gospel of Mark, every manuscript we have has some kind of inscription or title on the top. And in the Greek, it would be, for example, Kata Markon, according to Mark, or it might be the Gospel according to Mark, or something like that. But there is no Gospel manuscript that we have that has the beginning of the Gospel, that has that is absent an ascription to someone named Mark. So I think it's probably very reasonable to suppose that not only this gospel, but the other gospels are actually written by the people to whom they are traditionally ascribed.
So do we find him any place? Is he the John Mark of Paul's missionary journeys? Is he the young man who flees away the Garden of Gethsemane when the temple guard comes to arrest Jesus?
Well, you know, we have a whole bunch of possibilities for Mark. He could be the one connected to Peter in 1 Peter 5:13, where that's mentioned, that Mark, his son. It could be the John Mark of the book of Acts. And here we have Acts 12:12 and 25, Acts 15:37, Acts 15:39. So this is the one now who left Paul and Barnabas on their first missionary journey as they came into Asia Minor from the south at Pamphylia there, and then he returned to Jerusalem. Or it could be, and is it the same guy, who is mentioned in Philemon 24 or 2 Timothy 4:11 as someone who is with Paul in an imprisonment situation. And I think, Todd, generally speaking, traditionally, people have thought that all three of these, i.e. the one mentioned in 1 Peter, the one mentioned in Acts 12 and Acts 15, and then the one mentioned by Paul in Philemon 24 and 2 Timothy 4:11 are the same guy. You know, people dispute that, but there's sort of no way to know, and as I tell my classes, unfortunately, the videotapes from that time have been burned.
So the church attributes it to a Mark. We're not exactly sure. We can't say for sure which Mark, or if it's any of those. What would you say with regard to where Mark got his stuff for the gospel, regardless of who he may be, where he got his stuff for the gospel he penned?
Right. Well, now here's the thing where the early church fathers are pretty helpful. And they always connect Mark to Peter. So that's why in giving the New Testament citations, as I did, I kind of started with the 1 Peter 5:1, because Mark and Peter are connected from our earliest sources. So if we went to Papias, for example, late first century, lived to maybe 130 or so, he has some very specific things to say about Mark's composition of the gospel. And let me just read this to you. This is my own translation now of Papias. And here's what he says. Eusebius is citing Papias, and he says, the old elder used to say, Mark, because he had become the interpreter of Peter, wrote accurately, not, however, in order, the things either said or done by the Lord, as many as he remembered. For he, that is Mark, did not hear the Lord nor follow him, but later, as I declared, Peter. He, Peter, used to compose the teachings relative to the people's needs, but not under the impression that he was composing a systematic treatise of the utterances or reports of the Lord. Now, the result is, I'm still quoting now here, Eusebius quoting Papias, with the result that Mark made an error in no way by writing some things as he remembered them. For he carefully took prior thought of one thing, to leave out nothing of the things he had heard or to falsify anything in them. Now, that quotation comes probably within 50 years of Mark writing his gospel. So what does he say here? Well, he says that Mark was kind of the interpreter of Peter, that he wrote down the things that Peter proclaimed, that Peter did not compose a systematic treatise of what Jesus said, but that rather he composed his teaching relative to the needs of the people. And then finally, that Mark kind of presented this, his material, in the way that Peter did. He says, not in order. He actually uses that phraseology. So It's kind of interesting here. There's a close connection to Peter, but you might say it's a little bit for our likes, a little bit loosey-goosey about the content in terms of, let's say, chronological regularity or something like that. However, it is formulated in such a way that it meets the needs of the listeners or of the readers.
With only about a minute here, when he says order, do you think he's referring only to chronological order or to some kind of a scheme of thought, a theme, if you will? We've only got about a minute and no more.
Yeah, I don't know if we would know that. I think really key here is this idea that Peter used to compose the teachings relative to the needs. Now, this, Todd, gives me the thought that Mark is really choosing what he's presenting in his gospel very much with his audience in mind, just the way he learned it from Peter.
Let's take a break right there. When we come back, we'll talk more about Mark the Evangelist. Dr. Jim Vells is our guest. He's professor of New Testament at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis and author of the forthcoming Concordia Commentary on Mark. I invite your questions and comments, 1-877-623-6943. That's our in-studio phone number, 877-623-6943. Send us an email right here in the studio. We get them in real time with your questions and comments. talkback@issuesetc.org. talkback@issuesetc.org, or send us a tweet at @issuesetc. When we come back, a little bit more about what the earliest church had to say about Mark, and then we'll talk about the gospel that he penned. It is, well, it's often known for its brevity, its quick pace. If he was writing with his audience keenly in mind, why did he write it that way? We'll be right back.
South Africa, China,
Germany, Trinidad and Tobago.
Did you know that people listen to Issues Etc. around the world?
India, Sweden,
Egypt, France,
Turkey, Japan,
Australia, Canada,
United Kingdom,
Hong Kong,
Austria, Finland,
Malaysia, Singapore,
Bulgaria, Korea,
Brazil. You can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Help us proclaim Christ to the world.
The Philippines, Mexico,
Spain, New Zealand, Kuwait.
The faith once for all delivered to the saints. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Have you ever wanted a concise resource on the history of Christianity from the time of the apostles through today? Well, we have just the book for you. It's titled The Church from Age to Age, A History from Galilee to Global Christianity. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase The Church from Age to Age by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. The Church from Age to Age, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April.
What makes Christ Our Savior Lutheran Church in Freeburg, Illinois so special? Our new members talk about the family atmosphere, the welcoming people, and the outstanding music. But most importantly, you'll be confronted with your sin and comforted with the assurance that Jesus has removed that sin so that you can live each day as His baptized and forgiven child. Christ Our Savior Lutheran Church is at 612 North State Street in Freeburg, Illinois. Sunday worship is at 9 a.m., Sunday school and Bible classes at 10:20 a.m. Call 618-539-5664.
That's the Concordia University Concert Artists from Concordia University Portland with the Alleluia Chorus. You know that one from Handel's Messiah. And that's playing right now at Lutheran Public Radio. That's LutheranPublicRadio.org. It's sacred music for the world. And during the Easter season, the best of the church's music for the 50 days of Easter, LutheranPublicRadio.org, 24/7 for the 50 days of Easter, LutheranPublicRadio.org. Dr. Jim Vels is our guest. We're talking about Mark the Evangelist on this St. Mark's Day, Wednesday, April the 25th. Dr. Vels, when did Mark write what he wrote?
Well, there you have a certain amount of dispute. I would say most scholars would say just a little bit before or just a little bit after 70 AD with the fall of Jerusalem and the destruction of the temple. But I think it's pretty clear that it is distinctly before 70 AD, as indeed are probably all the books of the New Testament. In this, I follow Bo Ryka and J.A.T. Robinson, who have a very early dating for the books of the New Testament. Now, partly, this is, again, let's look at some early church fathers. Irenaeus, who wrote at the end of the second century, says this: Matthew, among the Hebrews, produced also a writing of a gospel in their own language, while Peter and Paul in Rome were evangelizing and founding the church. All right, now what does that do? That places Matthew, while Peter and Paul were in Rome alive. So we're talking about the 60s, early 60s. Then he says, after the exit of these men, and the Greek uses the term exodus, interestingly, Mark, the disciple and interpreter of Peter, also himself in writing, handed down to us the things that used to be proclaimed by Peter. Now, I want the listeners to realize how this writing by Irenaeus, which is probably, let's just say, something like 70 or 80 years later than the Papias quotation, confirms absolutely what Papias said. That is to say, it links Mark and Peter closely, and it says that this took place after the death of these men, and that he handed down, as tradition, the things that were proclaimed by Peter. So we'll probably date this in the 60s, let's say, and the 60s are the time when there was plenty of violence abroad in the land, as the let's use some kind of contemporary terminology here, as insurgents arose in the Palestinian area against Rome, and these insurgents eventually flared into total war, which led in 66 to 70 led to the open warfare with Rome and the final destruction of the temple. But this insurgency was going already in the late 50s, in the 60s, and it's probable that it was during this time that this was all written. I want to quote one more early father, and that is, this is just a little later now, Clement of Alexandria. Now, Clement would have been writing about the time of Irenaeus, maybe a little bit later. But he says this, and I think Clement, who was quite a good biblical scholar, is right on target here. He says that the Gospels containing the genealogies were written first. Now, which ones are those? Those are Matthew and Luke. The Gospel according to Mark possessed the following arrangement, he says. After Peter had proclaimed the word publicly in Rome and by the Spirit had spoken forth the gospel, those present exhorted Mark to write the things up, supposing that he had followed him long before and still had in his memory the things he had said. After he had done this, he shared the gospel with those who were petitioning him. Peter, who's still on the scene here, after knowing this, neither prevented nor urged this on. So Peter's is somehow in this account still alive. But I want you to notice, and this is really what's important about this, this places the Gospel of Mark and the Gospel of John as following the Gospels of Matthew and Luke. And I think for the understanding of the four Gospels, this is absolutely critical. And what I mean by that is the two Gospels with the genealogies are written first. They are written to give a basic account, one for the Jews, that's Matthew, one for the Gentiles, that's Luke, and then Mark and John give themselves a kind of a, give to us by themselves a kind of a different portrayal of the story. Mark conveying a much more human Jesus, John conveying a much more divine kind of Jesus, but both of them, if I may put it this way, both of them kind of playing off of the straight story that the two Gospels with the genealogies present to us.
To whom do we think Mark is writing this Gospel? What's his audience?
I think he's writing to the people in Rome, just as these guys say, that he is the follower of Peter. Peter is preaching in Rome, and he is preaching to that audience. And I'm thinking that it's in the 60s where some kind of persecution is starting to arise. There's persecution on the part of the Zealots, who are the Jews in Palestine. And more importantly, there's persecution on the part of the Roman officials, who now are getting a little bit worried about this particular movement. And I think, Todd, this is confirmed by what I hope we can talk about now in the next few minutes about just the content of Mark, the way Jesus is portrayed, and the way the whole book works out. I think it confirms the notion of people undergoing some persecution early on, and perhaps a place like Rome.
Before we talk about the content in particular, we got a question from Brian, who's listening in St. Louis. Brian, thanks for waiting on the line.
Well, just two, actually. I was looking for what you would recommend as a commentary on the Gospel of John, and also, I'm really looking forward to your publication, your commentary on Mark. Do you have a date for that yet?
Great question. Thank you very much, Brian. Thanks for listening in St. Louis.
Now, I'm wondering if Brian misspoke himself there when he asked for commentary on John. Did he mean Mark?
I think he meant John, and then he was curious about your commentary on Mark.
Yeah. Okay. Believe it or not, I'm really old-fashioned in this commentary business, because to me, you have to have a commentary that takes the text seriously, and so it's not trying to reconstruct the text, or it's not trying to criticize the text, and so on like that. So, frankly, for something like the Gospel of John, some of these older English commentaries are actually pretty darn helpful. And I would say if you went to hold on a second here. The old Hoskins and Davy commentary is really interesting. Don Carson, who wrote this like within the last 10 years or so, has a very nice commentary. These sorts of commentaries are good precisely because they take the text seriously as we have it. You know, for example, what's the contrast to what I'm talking about? Bultmann's commentary on the Gospel of John rearranges the chapters. Well, you know, when you start doing things like that, I think you have a problem. So now we're looking forward to Bill Weinrich's commentary on the Gospel of John in the Concordia series, which I understand he's making some fairly decent progress, but that will be out. That'll be a few years yet before that comes out.
What about yours on Mark, real quick?
Right. Well, I've got the first half completed, Mark 1:1 to 8:26. And the whole manuscript's been submitted to Concordia Publishing House. That should be through the various editorial processes by the end of this year, and it will be out later in 2013.
Now, I think we've got about a minute here before we need to break again.
Sure.
Get us started
sure.
on the plot. If it's said by the early church fathers that there was not an order to this, does that mean there isn't a plot to the Gospel of Mark?
Oh, far from it. There's plenty of plot in this Gospel, and especially important is the portrayal of Jesus and the disciples and how that relates to the plot. Now, Now, all the listeners here, I really want you to track with me on this. One thing that's important with the Gospels, the Spirit gave us four Gospels. And while they present a kind of a total picture of Jesus, we do them a disservice if we don't read each of them kind of respecting what each one brings to the table, like a particular facet to the diamond. Now, in the Gospel of Mark, Jesus is portrayed as much more human than he is in any of the other Gospels. You know, for example, in chapter 5, when the woman comes up from behind him with the issue of blood, that woman, and touches his garment, and it says that he felt the power going out from him. And then it says he kept looking around to see who touched him. And then the disciples say to him, "Well, what are you looking around for? Don't you see the people pressing in on you?" And it says, and he kept on looking around. I mean, it's a very human picture. In chapter 6, verse 5, it says he was not able to do miracles in his hometown because they didn't believe in him. In chapter 3, he, just as a normal human person, gets angry at the people who resist him when he's going to heal the man with the withered hand. So you have, and then of course, one of the oddest scenes of all is when Jesus walks on the water in chapter 6. This is after the feeding of the 5,000. And Mark has this exceedingly strange phrase that doesn't appear anyplace else. It says in verse 48, he was wanting to pass them by. And upon seeing him walking on the sea, they thought that it was a ghost, and they cried out. Well, what is that? He was wanting to pass them by.
Let's break right here. We'll get an answer to that question on the other side. Dr. Jim Vels is our guest. We're talking about Mark the Evangelist. It's Wednesday afternoon, April the 25th. Dr. Vels is professor of New Testament at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis, and he's author of the forthcoming Concordia Commentary on Mark.
What happens when you take solid doctrine and solid curriculum and combine them with ancient scholars and modern technology? You get Wittenberg Academy, the very first completely online classical Lutheran high school. We are unabashedly Lutheran and offer families a rigorous standard of academic excellence. Students can pick and choose classes, or they can utilize our entire curriculum for their high school education. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Christological, creedal, confessional. You're listening to Issues Etc.
You can listen to Issues Etc. live and on demand with the new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. You can get these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Give us a call, send us an email, or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Issues Etc. in the palm of your hand. The new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. Download today at issuesetc.org. There's an app for that.
Thank you, Todd, and thanks for everything you do.
Pastor Matt Harrison, president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, on the value of Issues Etc.
You've done so much to teach so many people about the depth of the gospel and to find joy in the Christian life and experience.
Educating a new generation of Lutherans. Issues Etc. Listen to what you want, when you want, at issuesetc.org.
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. We're talking Mark the Evangelist with Dr. Jim Vels on this St. Mark's Day, Wednesday, April the 25th. Dr. Vells, before the break, you were giving us some examples from Mark's Gospel of the very human portrayal of Jesus there. And you say that those examples tie into the main theme of the Gospel itself. How so?
Yes. Now, this is a very important part of this interview. This is really, in my mind, what the gospel is about. Most people, most commentary writers think that the gospel of Mark is about Jesus' suffering and discipleship and people walking in the way of the cross. That's sort of the take up your cross and follow me. That's sort of the common understanding in the commentaries. But I think that's a penultimate, a secondary concern. It seems to me that this gospel, when you look at it, you see a picture of Jesus that's a tough picture to handle. You know, he seems divine, he casts out demons, but then he seems human, he's a frail human being. The plot, the voice declares from the sky, "You are my beloved son," yet his relatives in chapter 3 think that he's crazy and they try to seize him and so forth. And the disciples don't understand. Now, here's the way I would put it. This gospel, we see a Jesus who's hard to understand and a story that's hard to follow, and it's tough to see him clearly and believe. Hence, we have that key pericope in 8:22-26, where it takes the man two stages to see clearly. That's a historical event, but it's also kind of a metaphor for the way you get to see Jesus. You don't see him clearly at first. And now, the key passage in this gospel is chapter 15, verse 32, at the cross. Here's what the Jewish leaders say: "The Christ, the King of Israel, let him come down now from the cross," now listen to this, Todd, "in order that we may see and believe." And that is what this gospel will not give you. Jesus does not come down from the cross. That's why there are no resurrection appearances in this gospel's Easter morning story. You do not, in this gospel, see and believe. Rather, first you have to believe, and then you'll see. That's why what's important in this gospel is Jesus' word. And in chapter 14, he says to the people, "After I have arisen, I will go before you into Galilee." Now, in chapter 16, in verse 7, the young man at the tomb says to the women, "He is going before you into Galilee. There you will see him," listen to this, "just as he told you." This gospel is about the word, the necessity of the word of promise, and the surety of the word. So, There's always in this gospel an ambiguous picture of Jesus, but he has strong promises that come true at every place in the gospel. His three passion predictions, 8:31, 9:31, 10:33, and 34, and all the parts of the passion predictions come true. And yet you don't kind of see the divinity in the way that you do in some of these other gospels. Now, that's why the gospel ends at 16:8. It ends with the word of promise.
So let's talk a little bit about that. We have about, I would say, about 5 minutes here to discuss it.
Mm-hmm.
It ends at 8. You're convinced of this. How
yes.
should we regard the added verses that are often bracketed off in those English texts?
Yeah, don't get there too fast. Let's talk about it ending at 16:8. There is very important proof for the gospel not going on beyond 16:8. In other words, most people believe that this is just kind of some modern, new invention or something like that. The fact of the matter is, there are a number of manuscripts, and to be tell you the truth, Todd, I know of no other place in the whole New Testament where this is the case. There are a number of manuscripts that actually comment on whether the text ends there or not. So they in the manuscripts themselves, one of the set of manuscripts says this: in some of the copies, Here, the evangelist fulfills his gospel, as Eusebius says. But in others, the following verses are added, and those are verses 9 through 20. And another two very important manuscripts say, these things are presented now after the words, "for they were afraid." And so then they add those words later. In other words, these are aware, these manuscript copiers are aware that there's an issue with the ending. Now, this Eusebius that we've talked about, that early church father from the early 4th century, he actually, almost no one, Todd, knows about this. He actually comments on the ending of Mark in a discussion of this, and here is what he says. He says, "The accurate manuscripts define the end of the history according to the Mark with the words of the young man who appeared to the women and said, 'Do not fear, you are seeking Jesus the Nazarene,' and the words that followed. And having heard this, they fled, and they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid." Eusebius continues, "For in this way, the ending of the gospel according to Mark is defined in nearly all the copies." So the early church had plenty of copies that ended it right here. What's with the long ending then? The long ending looks to be a composition probably from the middle of the second century. It's got a lot of concerns like that. The vocabulary, the syntax, the Greek in general is different from the rest of the gospel. Your listeners are going to have to kind of believe me on that, but it is. And it basically summarizes the contents of particularly Luke and John in terms of the appearances of Jesus. But it's important for me to tell the listeners that that this is not just something made up by liberals, you know, that it ends at 16:8. Manuscripts discuss this, and more importantly, Eusebius talks about this specifically.
So with about 3 minutes here, that actually comports better with the main theme that you described there, the way that Mark wants to present Jesus in this, as you, what I think you put it, difficult to swallow Jesus. That,
right.
That shorter ending comports better with the rest of the theme of the gospel.
That's exactly right. And so, in other words, I put it like this. I preached in chapel on this recently. I said, the gospel, you experience the resurrection just the way the gospel of Mark ends, i.e., with the promise of the word. And that's a word you can bank on. So that's why this is actually quite important. And by the way, before we have to stop here, I do want to say that anybody who's interested in the Gospel of Mark and interested to this can hear me every Sunday on stpaulsradio.com, which is broadcast. My Bible class on Sunday mornings is broadcast by Miles Whitener, who's the producer and director of this, at stpaulsradio.com. And they'll be able to hear me do the Gospel. I'm in Chapter 3 right now, and we range all over the Gospel constantly, so it'd be great to have a few more people tuning in and listening to that.
We got just a few more minutes here, Dr. Veltz. When we sit down to read Mark's gospel, I know you've said this before, but explain why it is. We should, every once in a while, read it from beginning to end in one sitting. Why is that? You got about a minute and a half.
I would say because it will wash over us just how perplexing this story is. You will see it in one pericope, that is to say, one unit of story, after another. You know, we proceed in this gospel from Jesus talking to demons to the Sadducees, the scribes thinking that he's in league with Satan, to his family coming to grab him, to the parables. I mean, you have to experience that. You can only experience it if you read it kind of in one trot like that.
Why, finally, with about a minute, should people delve deeply into this often considered simplest of the Gospels?
It is by far not the simplest. It is the most complex of the Gospels. This Gospel stands to the Gospel of Matthew if I may use this analogy, as Jesus Christ Superstar stands to the greatest story ever told. That is to say, the greatest story ever told was a basic story about the life of Jesus. Jesus Christ Superstar is kind of a drama on the story, assuming you know the whole story. And that's exactly the way this gospel functions. It, too, is a kind of a dramatic presentation which speaks to this issue. I could be so much better a Christian if I could have just been there and seen Jesus myself. I could hold on and I could endure persecution. And the answer of the Gospel of Mark is, no, it wouldn't be any different. If you had been there and if you had seen him, you would have had to have believed his word as well.
Dr. Jim Vels is professor of New Testament at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. He's author of the forthcoming Concordia Commentary on Mark. Dr. Vels, thank you very much for your time.
You bet. Anytime.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Deaconess Pam Nielsen here at the end of this hour and into the second hour teaching a Sunday school lesson. We'll go to Acts 15. We're going to talk about the council at Jerusalem where circumcision is the big deal, where the apostles come to some unanimity on the issue of circumcision. And then Paul turns around and circumcises Timothy. That's next.
This is a message for members of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Thrivent Financial has a new charitable grant program called Thrivent Choice. Thrivent Choice allows you to designate charitable outreach funds to Lutheran Public Radio. For more information, look for the Thrivent logo under the Donate page of our website, issuesetc.org, or ask your Thrivent representative about Thrivent Choice. Help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. with Thrivent Choice.
It was the day after Christmas in 1538 when family and friends who were gathered around Luther's table heard him say, "There is no finer gift that a parent can give to a child than an education in the liberal arts." For over 100 years, St. Paul's Lutheran School in Brookfield, Illinois, has been emphasizing the six chief parts and the seven liberal arts, providing classical education in the Lutheran tradition. Visit our website at spbrookfield.org or call 708-485-0650.
Others talk. We have something to say. You're listening to Issues Etc.
They Were Afraid, an Easter sermon preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin.
For to proclaim the resurrection of Jesus, an empty tomb, is not good news, not for sinners, apart from his death for sinners.
And we'll send you a CD of this sermon and an Ascension sermon for any size gift during the 50 days of Easter. Make a secure online donation today, issuesetc.org. Thanks for your support during the Easter season.
Does your church need a full-time or backup organist? The virtual organist service from Church Music Solutions is genuine organ leadership using your instrument with your specific selections when you need it. You can try it out for free with our demo unit, which allows you and your members to hear and see the virtual organist without obligation and without a sales pitch. For more details, go to churchmusicsolutions.com.